G'day, welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm Graham Curry, your host from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle, and I successfully maintained that weight loss now coming up 2 years. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what it's like to living an intermittent fasting lifestyle. I'm also the author of the book, The Fasting Highway, which is a story of my journey overcoming chronic addiction to fast food and sugar and taking that walk from morbid obesity to normality. So sit back here with us on the Fasting Highway in the next few weeks and listen to some inspiring guests and some experts in the intermittent fasting community. And thank you for joining us. Enjoy the show. The following podcast is the opinion of the host and guests only. Make sure you consult with your medical professional before you begin any health plan and do not take information from this podcast as medical advice. Thank you. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and this is episode 54. So today I'm here with John Beaver, and John is the father of two sons, and he's a manager for a wholesale electrical supply business in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in the United States. And John has had a lifelong struggle with his weight, and he topped out at 387 pounds in late 2007, just before having bariatric surgery in May 2008. And prior to and after the surgical intervention, John lost 180 pounds, likely saving his life and shrinking to a low weight of 204 pounds in early 2009, before to begin to slowly, and not so slowly, regain the weight in spite of the physical realignment of his anatomy. And here to fill us in on the rest of the story is the amazing John Beaver.
Oh, g'day, John, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Graham. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, much appreciated, and really love your story, John, and I'm sure the listeners will too. So, John, for the listeners that don't know you, perhaps you could give a bit of backstory as to sort of any problems you had through your life with weight and health and that sort of thing, and what actually led you to intermittent fasting?
Sure. So I'm 51 years old now. And so I've kind of always had carried a lot of weight since probably I was at least an early teen. It kind of went up over time, up through college and then up through my 20s and 30s. And then I came along at right about 40 years old to kind of an all-time high, and realized that, hey, something's got to change here, or it's, you know, it's going to be really dramatic. And so at right about 40, 39 in 2008, I kind of took that on and took on the early path of actual surgical intervention. And so in 2008, I went in and I had bariatric surgery. I had the sleeve gastrectomy, where they physically just remove about a little over three quarters of your stomach. And at that point, I was 39. When I went in to actually start that process, the weight at that point was 387 pounds on the first appointment with the surgeon. And so for that process, the surgeon had me, and he had me lose 10% to be able to actually go for the surgery. So I did that. I had the surgery in May of 2008, and then I kind of really rapidly lost down to just over 200 pounds. So, you know, almost a little over 180 pounds. And that was in less than a year that came off really quickly. So the surgeon did a great job. He changed my body, changed my gut, you know, and that brought that weight off, you know, mechanically. There was really no option. The first few weeks, there was no eating after that surgery. It was clear liquids for about 3 weeks. So you can imagine how weight came off with 3 weeks of clear liquids. And then the first meal was, they said, you can have one scrambled egg. And so I'm like, you know, I've been eating more food than that my whole life. I'm still, you know, topping in at over 300 pounds. I'm like, I'm not cooking one scrambled egg. So I cooked two, and I literally could not eat one scrambled egg physically at that point. And so that, you know, that went on for, you know, the first year. But then, you know, while the surgeon did a great job, still my lifestyle didn't change. My head didn't change. And so I kind of went back to old habits over time. I started to eat differently. The anatomy changed, and then that weight kind of bottomed out really quickly, and then it started to creep back on. You know, month over month, it started to creep back on a little bit at a time. And then over the period of, 10 or 12 years, I found myself back up to, you know, right around the 300-pound range again, and realizing that, hey, this is, you know, while that surgery was certainly a life-altering and probably a life-saving intervention, because at 40, I was headed absolutely the wrong way. I was still headed the wrong way again, and needed to find some change, you know, to look at some new alternatives as I was kind of crossing the 50-year-old mark. So I started looking around at, okay, what am I going to do here? So I looked back at, you know, some old things that had served me in the past, kind of low carb eating, low carb dieting had worked well-ish for me. So I kind of looked at that, piddled with that a while, but it didn't feel well. I didn't feel well. It seemed very restrictive. And then I kind of happened across an old friend from the weight loss surgery community online who was talking about, she was doing some intermittent fasting. That was a new term to me. And I thought, well, I understand those words, you know, those words go together. And so I just kind of thought, okay, well, just not eat for a while and eat for a while. And so I tried that just kind of blindly. That was early in 2020 in the spring. And it was horrible. I was like, this is terrible. Because I was hungry. I was hangry. You know, I was having just my regular coffee, and then, you know, I was chewing gum all day, having mints, you know, but no food. So it didn't work out. I didn't like it. And then, I don't know, along about, in August of 2020, I happened to see, at my local library, I happened to see the new book rollout, Fast, Feast, Repeat, came across as one of the new books from Jen Stevens, right? So I checked that out from the library mid-August, and I read that thing in about 2 days. And all of a sudden, I realized why that whole intermittent fasting with no plan didn't work for me back in the spring, because I was doing it wrong. And so after I read that book, that was right before my 51st birthday, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna do this. So I kind of bailed in, having read that, and I started off the day after my birthday, on August 23rd, I started off, and just kind of haven't looked back since then.
Oh, that's fantastic, mate. And so great how you had that moment where you picked up Jin's book and realized that you weren't doing it properly and you changed that. So just run us through some of your stats, John, when you actually started on that August 23rd. What sort of weight were you, and also what height are you as well?
So I'm like 5'11", And at that point, on August 23rd, first day, because I had read, I got all the apps, I started out at 293 pounds, or about 133 kilos for the global listeners. And I kind of started off my schedule with my days and everything. My schedule just kind of lent itself to initially a 5 hour eating window in the evenings. So I would start my day and just go off to work and run through the day and not eat until I got home. And that, you know, based on a book, that seemed like maybe that's going to be a little aggressive, but I'm like, well, I'll just give that a shot. And it worked really well. And then very shortly after, even less than, 2 weeks, I kind of was cutting that down to 3 hours. And now over time, it's kind of averaged out to really only most days, it's about 2 hours. So I'm fasting, 22 hours a day, and I'm eating in about a 2 hour window most days of the week.
Oh, that's great. So with reading Jin's book, did you really click into that clean fast message straight away once you actually read the book?
I really did, and it made such a difference in how the fast worked for me and how I felt in doing it. And at that point, I would say it took me, no more than about 3 days to really just roll right along and feel just really energized and so much better, not to have any hunger, not to have any real issues whatsoever with the fasting. So the clean fast was really the magical part of making it work and make it easy for me.
Yeah, so just for people out there that may not know what we're talking about there with the clean fast, during your fasting period, we're just talking about things like black coffee, black tea, water, plain sparkling water, or plain green tea, and that's really important so as not to spike our insulin, isn't it, John, and keep that down as low as possible through that fasting period.
It really is, and when I had kind of stumbled at it before, the misses for me were I was still trying to put, just some heavy cream in my coffee, thinking, well, it's pure fat, it won't make a difference. Or some sugar-free gum in the middle of the day, well, that won't make a difference. There's no calories. Well, those things really made the difference because they triggered, an insulin response. And I didn't understand that without having read the books and understanding how the body worked, And I think the other thing that kind of made a big difference to me was getting the fact that it really is about managing the chemicals and the hormones in the body to let the body do what it should be doing, and the message of, hey, this is really about letting your body do the right things that it wants to do. This is not your fault. This is not something that's a weakness. This is really about righting the ship and getting it, the right way and letting your body manage the chemicals appropriately in the way that it should.
Yeah. So just with your eating window, John, when you first started that 22 and 2, you eventually got to after a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, what was that looking like? Were you a guy that was restricting anything, or were you delaying anything, or was it pretty much whatever you sort of felt like at that particular time?
So especially in the beginning, it was absolutely not restricting anything at all, not purposefully restricting anything at all. I was still eating, whatever I wanted. Over time, I have found out that there are certain things that my body is not as welcoming to. With less food coming in, I can tell better. So I used to be a big fan of pasta, and I would cook pasta and have pasta maybe 2 or 3 days a week. And now I'm finding that that really doesn't agree with me. You know, in a smaller eating window and with less foods mixed in there, I can tell that I don't feel well the day after having that. I can tell that more highly processed foods particularly don't agree with my system now. One of the things that we have here, I don't know if you have everywhere, but we have this processed cheese. It comes in a big yellow brick. We used to put that in lots of things. Make cheese dip out of that, make macaroni and cheese out of that. It was one of my favorite things to mix up into lots of stuff. Now I it's not that I made a choice to restrict it because of the calories or anything like that, but I don't eat that anymore because it just naturally has fallen out of favor. So I still see, you know, I still choose pretty much whatever I want that makes me feel good on any given day, but I've found that I certainly have gravitated towards much more high quality foods.
Yeah, and I think that's a natural progression that we all find. I think anybody I've talked to or interviewed or been associated with in this community, that they normally have that message when they start. You know, one of the thing about intermittent fasting is people often say you can eat whatever you want, but there's a difference between eating what you want and eating what you need to reach those health goals. And sometimes, like you've identified there, some of your trigger foods and that sort of thing that are hindering your progress. I mean, at the end of the day, are you going to fast all day and make that window worthy? Or are you just going to eat whatever you want and hinder your progress? And I think that's a smart thing to do, to analyze which sort of foods have been a trigger for you in your life. For me, obviously, it was sugar and fast food, well documented. Also, things like bread. I mean, bread just and me just don't agree. I mean, I can look at a bread truck on the highway and I'll put on a kilo or two. You know, it's just how it is with me and bread. And I like bread with all my heart, but it just doesn't work well for me. Same as beer. I love beer with all my heart. I've drunk a lot of beer in my life. That doesn't agree with me. So I thought, okay, what am I going to do about that? So I just swapped it out and made a change, and I started drinking vodka and soda instead of beer, and that sort of was working for me. And then I started swapping out other foods. So to me, it wasn't denying. It was just common sense. And I think rather than say you can eat whatever you want, flip that on its head and say, well, maybe I'm going to eat whatever I need to make me feel the greatest to get to my health goals where I want to be.
Right. And that's what I have found. And I think that it's been interesting to me to realize that I haven't paid attention to that for a very long time. Yeah. You know, I have been a not only a volume kind of eater for a long time, but kind of a walk-by grazer, you know, to pick up something because it was there, kind of unconsciously, and eat things on the go. And now I'm much more aware of not snacking on things that are just there that really may or may not have any nutritional value, but they don't necessarily serve me to eat them.
Yeah, and I think you just made an important point there about grazing. I mean, we're not cows, so we don't need to graze all day. And that's one thing that we sort of change our mindset around that. And grazing is the reason why a lot of people put on a lot of weight in their lives and they become obese and that sort of thing. And I think when you are obese, what you also said there about volume was so true, because when I was obese, food to me was just volume. Well, that's all it was. I'd slap it on a plate, or most of the time I was eating out of a brown paper bag from the drive-thru. And so it never sort of dawned on me that all I was doing was eating volume. I wasn't eating nice food. And I always say, John, I used to taste my addictions. I wasn't tasting the food. And once I got to intermittent fasting and I found that it rewired my mindset around food and how I looked at it, and I really started slowing down and more mindful eating. Did you find things like mindful eating and just slowing down and enjoying your food and savoring it came for you as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I find kind of like you, I mean, I would find myself, you know, having even breakfast and lunch in the car, you know, and then having dinner, possibly in front of the TV, you know, and now where I'm just having dinner, I'm much more likely to cook dinner, put dinner on a real plate, eat dinner at the table, you know, sit down and do that as more of a ritual with the meal rather than just kind of plow through all the food and make it an actual meal. And that makes a difference in how you look at the whole process of eating your food, I think. And it gives a whole different importance to that when it's limited and you're purposefully sitting down to do that.
Yeah, agree. And I think it almost becomes like theater for me, the experience of the actual dining now, where I really take time with my plate and I really feel presentation's a big thing. And you're probably seeing John Jerry Saunders, big shout out to JJ and his meals that he posts, and just that color and presentation. I really logged into that because I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to prepare my meal, make it an experience and enjoy it. And then that mindful eating of deliberately, slowly, and just working through and chewing it properly. And it just totally rewired the whole way that I was eating intermittent fasting. And I think, you know, for me, what about you, John, with the restaurant style OMAD? Or are you just a guy that just eats one plate a day? Or do you go for that starter main dessert type?
No, I generally will come, like when I come home from work, I will generally have kind of some kind of a starter and then cook a meal and have the meal. And then that'll stretch out the whole, you know, the time period. And then I may have something to follow, you know, a little something sweet or something at the very tail end. That's kind of still limited. And if I do, that's usually small. But it's rarely just like one plate. So it's usually more of a stretched out kind of event.
Yeah. And we often talk about the wins with intermittent fasting and all the positives, but was there any struggles for you in those early sort of days or any negatives that you were sort of missing at what you were doing before, like socially or anything like that?
Well, I think because I started while we were in the middle of kind of quarantine lockdown, I had already had a lot of the loss of the social events. So I haven't really experienced that as much. I think just a few of the, you know, a few of the negatives that have come along the way have been just kind of turning through my clothes. You and I have talked about that a little bit online. That's a good and a bad thing, right? That you get to go towards new clothes, but we're not really at a place where you can go shopping yet. So there's been that. But as far as the social piece, we had already shut off so much that haven't had that. I do consider that as we look towards opening back up about how to adapt when all of the social opportunities come back and whether I've really learned, you know, how to take this new lifestyle into a world where all the social opportunities are there, right? I don't know exactly what that's going to look like because I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. It's quite unique as well when you sort of, you know, here in Australia, we haven't had that issue. We've pretty much been a normal life here in Western Australia, apart from the fact that we can't travel. I mean, everything else has been, you know, we're still going to see people. We still mingle with people. And I was in a pub a few weeks ago with 1,000 people. And I mean, when you hear that, it probably sounds so foreign to you at the moment, the way your situation is. And I think when it does open up, and I think for me, the social aspect was you just got to be flexible. I mean, we know Saturday's not a special occasion, as Jin wrote in the book, but unfortunately, a lot of special occasions do happen on a Saturday. So for me, it was about flexibility. I mean, I was in this for life. It's a lifestyle. And sometimes you just got to work around that. It might mean opening your window at a different time or fasting differently the day before. But the thing is not to panic and get so stricken that you think, you know, you just can't enjoy yourself and you can't go to somebody's wedding or, you know, a special birthday or something like that, or even celebrate your own birthday. Because it's really right. important that life moments have to fit into the lifestyle. And I think the social aspect for me was, okay, I'd go to a party still, but I'd be drinking vodka and soda. So I used to get a bit of ribbing from my mates that were all beer drinkers and say, hey, come on, what sort of girl drink is that? And I'd say, well, you know, it's a drink that's going to help me get healthier and I'm cool, I'm down with it, you know. And after a while, people just accept it. So, you know, I'd go to a party and I'd say, hey, do you want a vodka and soda? So, yeah, sure. And, you know, instead of standing by the food with the potato chips and, you know, the really sort of party type foods, I was the guy standing over by the cheese board because I thought they were the lesser of the two evils. And so you just work it out. And I know I go to a lot of conferences, John, for work, and I organize conferences for my job. And I found with the conferences it was easy because there were so many people there that, you know, you're just milling around. Nobody really noticed what you were doing. And so that was easy enough. But, yeah, it will be difficult or different, I should say, for you. But also you're just going to love going to those clothes shops, mate. I can just see you getting out right. of Oklahoma City there and hook up with Daniel Deal and go shopping. And you guys are going to have such a ball. I mean, it is so freeing and liberating to walk into a store. You've heard me talk about this many times ad nauseum about, you know, just being able to choose clothes off a, you know, normal menswear store and walk around in great clothes and feel good. And, you know, you touched on there. I don't know what it's like in lockdown because once you lose that sort of weight, and let's talk about that for a minute, John, your weight loss. You've obviously been in this over 6 months now. So from the top when you started to now, what does the weight loss look like?
So as of today, so from that 293 on the first day, today I weighed in at 219. So a little, what is that? A little over 70, little almost 80 pounds. Yeah. Quite a lot in that amount of time. And it's been really pretty steady. And it feels pretty fast to me, but it hasn't felt like an effort, you know. Every day is a new day and it's just one fast a day. I just get up and go on. So that's just coming off. I'm still at the point, you know, this short, it seems like a short amount of time. So this short amount of time, I'm still weighing every day. And I'm still tracking on an app, the Zero app. I'm using that to kind of track my fast and the Happy Scale app to track my weight. Just because I like to see that data, you know, and see it change over time. So that's coming. But it feels like my shape has changed like very dramatically just in the last 30 days. You know, your weight changes, but your shape changes differently. I'm sure you saw that with as much weight as you lost. So all of a sudden, my clothes didn't fit or fit so differently that I had to start really digging deep in the closet to find things that just didn't look obscene to go out in and go to work in. It's going to be spring. I'm going to have to start doing some shopping, I think.
Yeah, it's sort of crazy to always say to people, you know, normal circumstances, you know, when those clothes get too big, just get them out the door, because I hated, you know, having clothes around that were too baggy for me, because that mindset of just hanging on to clothes, and we've talked about that before, is just so negative, because all of us have done that through our life, John. We've lost weight on diets and we put those clothes in different piles. I mean, at one time I had 5 different size clothes in my wardrobe just in case I was particularly right. one of those sizes. And then I decided I'm only going to be one size now, okay? And the great thing about intermittent fasting, what I love, is the maintenance side of things. And, you know, losing that weight is one thing. Keeping it off is another. And I've done that for nearly 2 years, the 132 pounds weight loss, and I've kept in that range of 2 to 5 pounds. And for me, just having that one wardrobe, one size is so liberating that I can go back, clothes from last year or last winter, I can just get out, put on, they fit great, and it feels fantastic. And I always say to people, don't underestimate what part clothes play in this journey, because most of it's mental. It's about the way you feel about yourself. And I don't know, what sort of guy were you before IF, confidence-wise, that sort of thing? And do you think losing the 70 pounds and the way you feel at the moment, you can feel your confidence and self-esteem improving, or has that not been a problem for you?
You know, I don't think it was ever a huge problem for me. I felt generally pretty confident when I was in and around people I knew. I do think, as I was looking back at some of my journals and notes from when I had the weight loss surgery, and what I find is that I do think that losing the weight will change my confidence around people and in crowds of people that I don't know. So in an environment where I am an expert or where I am comfortable, I've never had really a confidence problem, no matter my size. But in public or in crowds, I do think it makes a difference. And I can kind of start to feel that already, even though I'm not, you know, obviously in any crowds today. But yeah, I do see it starting to make a change.
Yeah, I think that's really going to be amplified for you too, because of your situation here, being in lockdown and talking to guys, Andy Watson and Gary Metcalf in lockdown in London there. And they said it's just crazy that nobody has seen them basically for 7 or 8 months that they know. And so all of a sudden when you come out and people see you, it's going to be crazy. They're just going to look at you and go, wow, what's happened to you? And then there'll other side of the coin where some people might have gone into lockdown and they've been reasonably healthy and they've put on 20, 40 pounds in the last year. So then
we're definitely seeing that. We're seeing that both ways for sure.
Yeah.
I dropped in on some friends on Friday last week to just drop by and have cocktail. I hadn't seen these folks since well before lockdown. And as I came into the house, I was not sure I was going to be allowed to stay, because at first, you know, I came in, I had on my mask, of course, because we're still masking everywhere. But as I came into the house, they truly did not recognize me. They thought there was a stranger in their house. So, you know, that was interesting. And you're right. I think there's going to be some of those people that I've known for quite a long time that are going to be a little startled.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really funny. It's when people see you like that, particularly with a mask on, it would even amplify that even more. I can't imagine what that's like. And I think that's one of the joys. And I know I was walking down the street one day, and this guy I'd known for over 20 years of my life, knew him so well, he walked clean past me. I hadn't seen him for like a year. And I said, oh, Steve, how are you going? And he just looked at me and he was like, oh my God, what's happened to you? And I guess people's first reaction is they don't know whether you've been sick or, you know, you've had the weight loss surgery or something's happened to you, and they can't fathom just how much you've changed. And like you said, your body changes so much too. And I've noticed that the body shape, and even in maintenance, I find the longer I'm going with intermittent fasting and maintenance, my body just seems to change all the time. It's getting more tight. I'm starting to see muscles I haven't seen my whole life, and just that natural progression from the autography and that sort of thing. But yeah, you got to have a lot of fun ahead, that's for sure, John. So I just wanted to circle back a bit and talk about that weight loss surgery. And knowing what you know now and knowing about intermittent fasting, if you'd have known intermittent fasting was an option back then, would you perhaps try that rather than go down that path?
I think I would have absolutely tried it for sure. I would have liked to have known the things I know today then. Obviously I didn't, you know, and maybe the whole world didn't, you know, that was a long time ago, in the world of science, certainly. So we just flat didn't know. I would have liked to have had the option, but I can't, you know, I can't legitimately say I regret the surgery by any means, because at the weight I was on that trajectory, had I not had that intervention, you know, I might not be here to talk to you today, because it was all headed the wrong way. You know, I think I've been very fortunate between that surgery and just kind of the luck of the genetic draw. I've made it to this point, and I've never actually had any diagnosed medical issues. You know, I was kind of at the pre-diabetic blood sugar levels, and I was kind of at the pre-hypertension blood pressure levels. And I had, you know, I had some aches and pains. I had some back pains, had some knee and hip pains. But I hadn't made it to the point where I had to have anything medicated or anything surgically, you know, done for any of those things. So I know there's a lot of people that in my age and my weight range, and certainly with the history of carrying that much weight for that long, have not been as lucky. But I lucked out on a lot of those things. And so I think having that surgery, I lucked out. But yeah, I would have liked to have known the things about intermittent fasting, you know, in 2008 to be able to give that a shot, because it certainly is big, you know, it's life changing today.
Yeah, agree. And it is actually good now. We're in 2021, and hearing about medical clinics that for obese people that are actually recommending intermittent fasting before that process of weight loss surgery. And you only have to listen to Sarah Cull in episode 12 of this podcast, who works in a medical clinic in Auckland, New Zealand. And they have obese people and type 2 diabetes patients where the frontline treatment is intermittent fasting. And they won't put anyone down that surgical path until they've tried it. And I think that's so great. And we're hearing more and more medical people getting on board. And speaking of which, John, your doctor, have you seen him at all since you've been doing this?
I have not. I will be back to see him in a couple of months. I have seen, so I just saw my neurologist. So the one thing I did have pre-IF was I was suffering these terrible migraines, three, maybe four times a week. And so I had been to see the neurologist, and I had started to take medication for that. So I saw the neurologist about 3 weeks ago. The migraines have generally resolved to the point that I see those maybe once every other month now. And now I'm coming off of that medication. And so I do credit that to the intermittent fasting and the change in my overall diet, you know, what I eat, plus the pattern of how I eat. But I haven't seen my GP yet. The neurologist was quite startled with 70 pounds of weight loss since I had seen her.
Yeah, that's quite incredible. And I guess, you know, when you go to see your doctor, he's probably going to flip out too, and you get those blood work done and all that sort of thing. And I think that's important, probably, you know, after a sort of 6 to 12 months in this lifestyle, to follow up with some blood work and see where you're at. And I know when I did that and I lost, and so I'm on a similar path to, or well, I was on a similar path to what you're doing now, about that 12 pounds a month sort of mark. And then when I got to that 8 months and I lost, you know, around 100 pounds, I hit the wall and the plateau came.
Now, don't say that. Don't say that. That's not encouraging.
No, but, you know, there's three certainties in life, John, right? There's death, taxes, and weight loss plateaus. And so when you get to that weight loss plateau and you start evening out a bit, because it will happen. I mean, you know, I'm not being negative here. It's just a fact of life. We all go through that period. And you sort of thought about what happens when the scales stop moving. How are you going to deal with that?
I have, because of course I've heard your story and many other people's stories. And you know, if it stops today and plateaus, I feel so much better with this way of eating. I don't see it changing. You know, to me at this point, if my body needs to stop and readjust, then it absolutely can do that. I'm okay with that. And I don't see, you know, any need to make an immediate dramatic shift away. I might certainly tweak things around a little bit to kind of get things moving along. I haven't really thus far, because we just came out of our winter, I haven't really incorporated a lot of exercise, into my regime just yet. So I kind of look forward to that as spring turns into summer. So that would be something I, you know, would look at. But certainly I don't see that I would, you know, abandon all of the progress I've made or the intermittent fasting kind of way of life, because it's made such a change to my overall health. You know, the weight loss is kind of secondary at this point. It certainly was the initial impetus for me to get started. But now I see that, you know, the health benefits are far beyond, you know, and so I do expect, you know, at some point it's going to plateau out. And that's fine. It'll be what it'll be. We'll just keep rocking along and wait for the next change.
Yeah. And I guess with the health benefits, you talked about the migraines there. And we talk about the health benefits in the NSVs, or what we call non-scale victories, John, of which I found many, which you probably read about and that sort of thing. But to me, the health benefits and the non-scale victories are equally as thrilling as the weight loss. And I mean, I want to really emphasize in this podcast that this is not all about weight loss. It's about finding that wellness and feeling good, like you said, feeling good within yourself. And it's important not to compare to others. I mean, John and I are two guys that had a massive amount of weight to lose. Not everybody's got that sort of weight to lose. And everybody will lose at different rates. Some people will lose rapidly. Some people will lose slower. But when you get to those weight loss plateaus, it's important to trust the process. And I did that similar thing, John. I just thought, okay, well, this has been working. My body's having a bit of a rest. Let's just keep going and see what happens. And, you know, eventually the weight started moving down again. And you mentioned that exercise too. So that will probably be the next chapter for you, because when you do start exercising more, you'll probably be near the 100-pound mark by then. You'll feel great and you'll actually feel like doing it. And for me, it became an obsession after losing that 100 pounds. And when I was sort of, you know, 350, 360, I just didn't want to exercise. It was such a drag. And, you know, trying to walk, you know, 8 kilometers in a blazing hot day or something like that, or, you know, or going down to gyms and that sort of thing just didn't appeal to me. So I guess, you know, once you do start exercising, things will change, John. But we talk about mindset a lot in this lifestyle, John. What sort of mindset sort of shifts have you had in the way you sort of think about everything that you do now?
So I think, you know, one of the things I think when I first started and the weight initially started to come off and I started to feel just, you know, better a little bit, in the first couple of months, I felt, you know, like I was really in a rush. I was in a very big hurry. And then over the second couple of months, I realized, through a lot of reading, I reread Fast, Feast, Repeat, and then I got your book, Fasting Highway. I read that. I read The Obesity Code. I'm kind of a big reader. And so I did a lot of reading, and I realized, hey, you know what? This is really a long-term lifestyle. And so that kind of set in to me that this is not a rush. It's not a race. I had, you know, 40 plus years to get up to this point. And if it takes, years to get down and years to change to a better place, that's okay. And if I need to incorporate, like you were saying, life around this lifestyle, that's the important thing. The whole point of changing to a better lifestyle is to have a better life. not to limit your life, but to expand your life, you know, the length and the breadth of your life, you know, that's the goal here. And so that's kind of been the thing for me, is to, you know, because of lockdown, there haven't been a lot of opportunities, but when they come, the opportunity to expand, you know, the breadth of the life and be with people and do things, you know, I'm taking the lifestyle and doing that and shaping it around my life. And if that adds, you know, an extra week to the weight loss journey, that's okay, because I'm incorporating it into my life. And that was the goal to begin with, was to expand life as a whole.
Yeah, that's so great. Love it. And I always say to people, it took me 55 years to get as obese as I did, and I wasn't going to fix that in 5 minutes. And
absolutely.
It took me 15 months to get that weight off. And yeah, really important. Don't be in any hurry, as John said. And, you know, we often see people in the groups and that sort of thing saying, hey, I've been doing this for 2 weeks, it's not working. You know, I've only lost 3 pounds. Well, hey, if you're losing 1.5 pounds a week in the first couple of weeks, it's working. And you just got to give it time. And I always say to people, you need to give this 6 to 12 months at least before you can really give it that critique. And it's important to be consistent in what you do, because if 1 week you all of a sudden you start and you're doing 16 and 8, and then the next week you think, this isn't working, I'm going to do a 24 and or 23 and 1. Then the next week you move to ADF, and the next week you move to carnivore, or next week you move to vegan. You're chopping and changing so much. You're not giving your body that time to adjust. So just settle in and give it some time, 6 to 12 months, and then have a look at where you are, and then you can go from there. So, John, I want to talk about support networks for a minute, and I know you've been in lockdown there, so you probably haven't seen a lot of colleagues, that sort of thing, in your business, but just in your own family, have they been supportive of what you're doing with the fasting?
So everybody has been supportive. So I have two sons. So my older son is 23. He's recently moved out, and he's been really supportive, and this is really he's kind of one of the greatest stories out of the whole thing. He was kind of headed down the same track that I had been on my whole life. And so he saw me starting in August. And then as I lost weight, he kind of took my book to his house. And then in December, he started fasting. And at this point, he's lost a little over 40 pounds himself. So, that's kind of one of my greatest victories in the whole deal, is that at 23, he got to learn this way of life and learn the science and learn things that will keep him from having to learn this at 50, you know. So he certainly has been, the few friends that I've been able to see, everybody's been supportive. They had some questions, naturally. I had one friend who, you know, initially started out with, you know, the kind of the knee-jerk question of, well, so you're only eating, you know, once a day. That's not healthy, is it? You know, so I kind of had to explain, you know, and give him the, you know, a little bit of the science. And then I sent him a copy of Fast, Feast, Repeat to peruse on his own as well. But overall, I've not had a lot of pushback from anybody. I had a couple people, you know, that kind of, you know, came with, well, that, you know, that's really popular, you know, we'll see how it goes. And I kind of said, well, you know, you can see how it goes. It's, here's how it's going for me. You do you. It's working for me.
Yeah, love it. So, you do you and I'll do me. That's yep. The message. And so cool to hear about your son. And I think that's a big shout out to him. I think that's huge that a 23-year-old man has actually taken stock of his health, because I so wish I'd done that in my 20s, John, instead of going through my life being as obese as I was, and it held me back from so many things, career opportunities, so many things. I've traveled this world a lot, John, as an obese guy, but there was a lot of things I simply couldn't do. And one of the things I talk about was I remember being at the Grand Canyon, and all I wanted to do was go on a helicopter and fly through the Grand Canyon. And they wouldn't let me because I was too heavy. I was too, the weight was 130 kilos for the chopper. I was too heavy. And the pilot said, sorry, mate, we just can't take you. It's not going to work. And I remember being so gutted about that. And I remember some of the opportunities, and I've flown some long haul, 16, 18, 20 hours, you know, as an obese guy, and it's not fun. And, you know, obviously the alternative is to fly up the pointy end and cost you an absolute arm and a leg. So sometimes right. that's not always practical. And, you know, flying now is a dream. And I remember the first time I got on the aircraft after I lost all the weight, and I sat in a seat and I was just so emotional. Just people must have been thinking I was some sort of weirdo because I had tears running down my face, and I was just thrilled that I could actually sit in a normal economy class section seat. I had no trouble for the person next to me. Nobody was freaking out as I was walking down the aisle thinking, oh, my God, do not sit next to me. And you know that look, John. We've all seen that as a
business. I do. Absolutely.
Yeah, you're hearing me and, you know, sitting down and wondering if that seatbelt's going to fit you, or you have to call a stewardess and the you know, the hostess and say, well, hey, I need an extra belt or something. That's so embarrassing. I never actually got to that stage because I was the master of hiding it. I'd always get a pillow and put it over my lap, and they would just walk past and they knew what I was doing. And I don't think they ever wanted to embarrass me. So I never had that issue. But yeah, that's a whole new world opening up for us, John. Were they sort of, when you visualization, we talk about that at the start of our journey where we think, what's my life going to be like without this weight? What are some of the things I'm going to be able to do? Are there things you've got in mind that you'd really like to do? Like, you know, maybe go on a hike somewhere or do something that you've got this weight off?
There are. So last year at just the beginning of the pandemic, we were due to travel back to Europe. We were due to be in Spain for Fias in Valencia. I don't know if you know, that's their big festival in Valencia in Spain, which was actually middle of March each year. We were due to be there, and I was very excited to go, but I was dreading that flight, just like you were talking about, you know, to strap into that plane and fly Dallas to Madrid, about 9 hours. And so I'm looking forward to doing that again. It won't be this year, but maybe we'll go next year, and make that travel. And then, you know, that's all those days of walking up and down and around the cities, And so those kinds of things, traveling, those kinds of things, I'm looking forward to doing that. The other thing, in just the years after I had the surgery, while I was still kind of smaller, my son and I made several trips to amusement parks and rode the roller coasters kind of in different parts of the states. And, so I would really like to do that again, get back on some of the roller coasters that I haven't really been able to fit into for a little while, because I actually enjoy that a lot. So yeah, there's a lot of travel kind of things that I would look at and think, boy, that would be fun, but I don't know that I can physically manage that sucker, you know.
You got so much fun.
And then
John,
it is and beach kind of vacations, obviously, I kind of avoided a lot of that. And so, as you know, that's kind of a longer term deal. And I need to be a little more body recomposition going on, but maybe a couple more years.
Yeah.
Get to that.
That's fun, mate. And you've got so much to look forward to, and everything just opens up. I mean, going to the beach, like you just explained, I mean, I had a beach house for years, right? And I'd go to the beach, I'd never take my shirt off. And people used to say to me, how come you wear like a rashie? What we call a rashie here is one of those sun protection shirts, you know?
Yeah.
And I say, oh, well, I'm just trying to be skin cancer conscious and that. But that was a load of BS. I was just too embarrassed to take my shirt off. Simple as that. And that's why I didn't go to my local pool either, because I didn't want to take my shirt off. And now I just strut around. I don't care. It's great. And I love it. And, you know, it just feels free to be able to get in the ocean without a shirt on and not be embarrassed and not feel subconscious about it. And so many phobias, like you talked about, crowds, going to a restaurant, not worrying about you're going to break the chair, going to the movies, not worrying about you're not going to break the chair or fit in. Just all those things, just very simple things that most people take for granted when you're a 350-pound-plus guy you really worry about those things, and it becomes an obsession almost. That I know I used to get online and check out restaurants and have a look at their chairs to make sure that I thought it was going to be okay for me before I'd actually booked that restaurant. And that's how self-conscious I was about that. But, you know, like you, I was always a pretty confident guy in my own life and my own circle, but it wasn't until I got in amongst strangers and public big crowds, that's when it started going a bit pear-shaped for me as a big guy. You know, the stares we all get, that sort of thing. But now it's almost like I'm invisible, man. I walk down the street, nobody even notices me. I just walk along and I'm just like everyone else. And to me, that's all I ever wanted to be. I just wanted to be a normal guy. And so, John, we're getting towards the end here, but one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, do you think intermittent fasting will ever be mainstream?
You know, I hope so, because I think that there's just so much benefit there. I think if the medical profession can continue to grow that more, you know, you were talking about Sarah Cole and her clinic. You know, I think if the doctors can continue to come that way, I think there's a big battle, obviously, because the money is not there. Nobody's making a killing selling it. I mean, a literal killing selling it. But if we can, you know, people can see it happening, see it working, and the medical profession can continue to spread the word, it will sure help a lot of people.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think connections are great too. And we talked about the podcast before, you being in Oklahoma City there, and Daniel Deal, and he's sort of the opposite situation to you, actually. He started intermittent fasting, he lost a massive amount of weight, and his dad took it up. So there's a father and son team. You are a father and son team. So you four guys should get together and have a chat when you can, when you're out of that lockdown situation, because I think you'll have a lot to talk about and a lot in common. But also, John, before we wrap it up, if somebody out there is sitting there and they're 350 pounds or over 300 pounds and they're guys like us, you know, that were obese, what sort of things can you tell them and encourage them and motivate them and, you know, and just tell them where to start? What can they do?
I think the biggest thing is to just start, you know, get the book, get the Fast, Feast, Repeat book, get the Delay, Don't Deny book, get the Fasting Highway book, pick one. You know, pick one of the books, read the book, and then start. Take the clean fast, black coffee, black tea, water. Don't mess with that. Take the clean fast and stick to that. And if it's 12 hours to start, you know, and then stretch. If that's where you have to start with that. And don't be in a rush. The time it takes will be the time it takes. Just take it as it comes, and then stretch it out, and it will be easier every day. And before you know it, it will absolutely change your life, and you won't be at 350 pounds anymore. You'll be looking back thinking, why didn't I start sooner?
Yeah, great advice. And one clean fast a day, one worthy window a day, patience, positive mindset. The four pillars of this lifestyle, John, right there. So, John, thank you so much for joining me. I would really, really love to follow you up in 6 months and re-interview you again and see where you're at then, and especially when you come out of that lockdown. And I really wanted to send my best wishes to everybody in the States that's been in that situation. And as I said, we here in Australia haven't been in that situation. Well, some of our states have been, but Western Australia, we've been very fortunate, and I can't imagine what that's like. So I just wanted to send my regards to everybody in America, and I know this is going to get better, and I know we're all going to be back to normal, and we're about to travel and catch up with each other one day at a big international intermittent fasting conference. I would love that. But John Beaver,
absolutely,
thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Thanks, Graham.
Cheers, mate. Oh, thanks so much, John. That was a very inspirational testament that you gave there about the intermittent fasting lifestyle. And I wish you every success, and I can't wait to follow you up in 6 months' time. And that's an amazing weight loss in that time, and 70 pounds. And I think you're going to be a really shining light in this intermittent fasting community, as you are in our Facebook group, The Fasting Highway. And just a reminder that people can join The Fasting Highway Facebook group and come and get some support around your intermittent fasting lifestyle. And also thank you to the people buying my book out there on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. Thank you so much for the great reviews and the feedback and the thanks of messages I've been getting from all over the world. It's very heartwarming and humbling, but thank you. So anyway, coming up next week on the podcast, we're going to be speaking with Erica Corrieri. And Erica is the founder of the Delay Don't Deny Facebook group, Perth Branch. And Erica is a local to Western Australia here, and she's a very inspiring lady. And her own weight loss journey is quite remarkable. So don't miss that one coming up next week, Erica Corrieri. And in the meantime, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.